You think you've driven a terrible car in your life, but was it historically bad? Well, we'll find out today as we talk about the 100 worst cars of all time. My guest is John Perley Huffman, freelance automotive writer whose work appears regularly in the New York Times, Car and Driver, Popular Mechanics, and Hot Rod. John Perley Huffman, welcome to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Glad to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
Okay, so the what gave you the idea to put together this 100 worst cars of all time list?
Well, I was talking with my friend Scott Oldham, who runs the website Inside Line, and we thought we needed to do something ambitious and kind of a little bit irreverent to poke people and see what kind of reaction we got. So we came up with 100 list, and it got a huge reaction.
Yeah, I noticed there was a pretty long list of comments at the end of the article.
Very few, which are complimentary to me.
Well, that's the internet. No, very few people have anything good to say about anyone.
No.
There were a number of comments that were more thoughtful than others. A number of people took issue with some of your selections or thought you left out cars they thought should have been in, and I had a few suggestions myself. I don't know if I'll keep them to myself or not. We'll see how many calls we get.
Okay.
But it was certainly a discussion starter and really made you think, and there were quite a few cars, I have to admit. I must not be enough of an audiophile because there were a number of cars I'd never heard of, but there were several I actually had owned. And I said, yeah, right, uh-huh, yeah, oh, yes, definitely that one.
Yeah.
So a lot of fun, and I think that's the way we need to kind of look at this. So once you had the idea, okay, you were going to do something ambitious, and provocative. So how then did you proceed? How did you come up with the list itself?
Well, I wrote a list first. Then it went around, was passed around the entire staff at Inside Line. There's about 12 people there, and everybody added theirs and debated others. Some cars I wanted to get on there are not on there. Some cars that other people that I don't want to be on there are on there. And but I reported what was eventually came down to all the fighting and rigmarole, and then Scott Oldham, who runs the site, he made the final list. Since he's the boss, everybody wasn't going to argue with him after he'd listen to everybody.
Well, that's the whole point of being the boss, is that at the end of the day, you get to make the decisions, right?
And then you can stick the freelancer with the blame and the hatred on the internet.
Well, if you're going to post on the internet, you have to have a pretty thick hide to begin with.
No, I desperately need money.
Well, you know, either way, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
And when you look at this list, are there vehicles there? What was your biggest surprise as you were putting this together in terms of cars that made the list?
I would have put the Pontiac Solstice on there. I thought the Pontiac Solstice had more virtues than it was, but it came in at number 100. And I ended up with the Fiat 124 Sport Coupe, which is number 99, which is actually a photo of my car that I owned when I was in college. And there are some other cars like the Ariel Atom, which is a very narrowly focused car for track use, which made it on there, which I've always enjoyed driving them on the track, but other people point out that it's completely useless on the street. So those are at least some of the cars that surprised me that made it to the list from other people.
Okay, what cars did you want on the list that didn't make it?
I really despise the Jeep Compass, and it did not make the list. But I think that's the first one that comes to mind that I could think of that was really terrible. There were some more obscure cars from like Poland and the Soviet Union, which I championed, but it really they came across as too obscure and irrelevant to what we think of as the American automotive experience.
Okay. Well, how many cars on this list have you actually driven?
Oh, boy. I've been writing about cars for over 20 years. So I've driven about half of these cars, maybe more.
So did you actually ever drive a 1990 Chevy Lumina APV?
You betcha. That was the very first car I ever reviewed in my career.
Didn't like it. You know, that's really interesting because it's the first minivan I ever bought, and I put 200,000 miles on one of them, and I noticed someone in my town is still driving it.
Well, you've passed misery on for a long time.
Well, I did think that they did make improvements in it, but the 1990 version was underpowered and it needed a 4-speed transmission, not a 3-speed.
Yeah, the first one came out with a 3.4 liter 60-degree V6, which is the same engine that was used in the infamously terrible Chevy Citation, and the last version was used the Buick-based 3.8 liter 90-degree V6, which was actually a much better, more usable van.
Yeah, and they put a 4-speed transmission in it,
right,
which improved the gas mileage quite a bit on the highway.
But it was still fundamentally a silly design.
Yeah, well, I thought it looked like a shuttlecraft from Star Trek, and since I'm kind of a Trekkie, I kind of went for that.
I'm a total Trekkie, and I think it looked like the ugliest shuttlecraft on Star Trek.
Well, my kids liked it.
Okay.
And it survived my daughter running it into a ditch, so I thought that was pretty good.
Well, if she lived, that matters more than the van.
Yeah. So, okay, we're not going to get to all 100 cars, so I want to do two things first. One, we'll just kind of skim through the list, but I'm going to give the phone number because I would like people to be able to jump in on this discussion at any time. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. You can also find us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page, and you can leave a comment there. Now, the website that this list appears in is insideline.com. Insideline is one word, so insideline.com. If you want to go there and look at the 100 worst cars of all time list, you can kind of follow along and maybe call in as you have a response to this. And as I gave the phone number, all of our lines filled at the same time. So this should be good. Also, if you go to WPR.org, we have a link directly to the article. So go to WPR.org, go to the Kathleen Dunn page, and there's a link to the article. You'll want to look at this during the program because we aren't going to talk about all of these cars. Now, let's start at the bottom. We already mentioned the 2006 Pontiac Solstice, and you didn't think that deserved to be on the list, but why other people did. What was wrong with this car?
Well, the problem with the Solstice was it was engineered using the GM parts bin. It didn't have a lot of unique pieces. If you take a look at things like the, you don't even notice it sometimes, but it's the fog light and turn signal assembly, for instance, came off of a GMC Jimmy, and the side view mirrors came off of Fiat, and various other pieces came off of different products in the GM line. It was a very cheaply engineered car. And that compromise also showed up in things like there was no trunk space at all, which made it almost impossible to use as a daily driver. And the top was ridiculously difficult to use. Having said that, you know, I know a lot of people love driving Solstices, and that's one of the because it wasn't a bad driving car at all, and that's why I argued for it not to be on the list.
Well, if you look at the 2000s, Pontiac made a number of decisions that I kind of went, what? Like, why do we need a 2-seat sport car? I didn't quite get that where the market was.
Mm-hmm.
There were a number of other things they did. The GTO that they came out with was just. I thought, okay, so America needs a rear-wheel drive muscle car. I didn't get that. Then there was the Aztec, which is also on this list, which you say had a hand in killing Pontiac.
Yeah. Well, the reason why they did the GTO was that when GM originally killed the Camaro and the Firebird, Pontiac was still selling a lot of Firebirds, even though Chevrolet was selling a lot of Camaros. And the dealers really wanted a car to replace the Firebird. That's why they got the GTO. Then that car is actually a pretty nice car to drive. The Aztec, on the other hand, is kind of like the final nail in Pontiac's coffin. It came at a point in time when Pontiac was already reeling from a lot of really terrible cars in the first place, and it just came out and trumped it by being even worse than those cars were, and it made Pontiac almost irrelevant and almost in. Pretty clearly doomed it to what it is now, which is defunct.
Well, you know, and the interesting thing was that that GM came up with three vehicles that were basically the same design. The Aztec was one, the Buick Rendezvous, and I forget what the Chevrolet version of that was.
There wasn't a Chevrolet version. It was the Rendezvous and the Aztec.
Okay. It was just those two. And the Rendezvous, actually, my daughter owned one, and she just loved it. I just thought the Aztec was a really ugly car.
There's something to be said just for the basic idea of the Aztec. The basic idea of the Aztec, and I say this in the article, is there's often a good idea at the core of all these cars. And the Aztec, in some ways, is a crossover, an early crossover SUV, which is the heart of the family car market today. It was just badly executed. The Rendezvous, which used the same platform, wasn't quite as ugly, and didn't have the same effect on Buick that the Aztec had on Pontiac.
Yeah, I still haven't forgiven Buick for discontinuing the LeSabre line, but that's another show.
Yeah.
And I'm old, and so the LeSabre would appeal to me.
Yeah.
We have a whole bunch of people on the phone, so let's start going to calls right now.
Good.
And we'll start in Sheboygan and hear what car thing should be on the list. Good morning.
Hello. Is anybody there?
Yeah, go ahead. Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I can barely hear you guys at all. I had a Dodge Spirit, and I put three engines in that thing in 8 months.
So one engine in the front and two in the trunk?
Basically. It blew through 3 inches. It started blowing oil about a month after I got it through the rings. The dealer put another engine in it, and that engine started blowing it through the rings and the valves. And by the time we got into the third engine, it was just junk. I took it out. We got lucky. My wife was coming home with it, and about three blocks north of the house, it stalled on her. So she walked home, and we lived out in the country. And she said something happened. Well, I walked back down. I got about a block and a half up towards the car, and I noticed it. What had happened was it had blown a fuel line and spewed fuel all over the hot exhaust with the exhaust because it was that sideways engine. The exhaust manifold sat on the back with all the fuel lines, and it spewed hot fuel all over that exhaust pipe, and she caught fire and burned about three blocks. By the time the volunteer fire department got out of bed, it was burnt back to the trunk.
Well, yeah, I mean, there were a lot of mid-80s to late-90s Chrysler products that were considered for the list. The Spirit and the Plymouth version, whose name I can't even remember right now, were both considered, and we just thought we'd take pity on it and didn't put it on the list because we had so many other Chrysler products of that era on the list.
Yeah, there were quite a few Mopar items on that top 100 list.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a couple of others here that maybe people wouldn't be as familiar with. There were a number of AMC vehicles that made the list too, and one of them was the Eagle Premier. The Eagle line was sort of AMC's last attempt at maintaining life, and it didn't turn out so well for them.
Well, people forget that for a brief moment, Francis Renault owned American Motors, and the Premier was actually a version of the Renault 25, which is a large car sold in France. And it came here in the most boring box possible, had terrible reliability, and never sold at all. And it was the last AMC. And it's kind of sad to see it go. There are a lot of good AMCs that I liked. I mean, I have a passion for old Javelins and old AMXs and things like that. So it's kind of sad, and obviously all the old Ramblers. So it's kind of sad to see that car killing off AMC.
Yeah, there were a number of AMC vehicles on the list, but the you pretty much hit most of the major automakers. Everybody's had some kind of a a misstep. I mean, when we think about worst cars of all time, the one that leapt to my mind was the Edsel. Of course, people have associated that with mediocrity, to be kind, for years.
Yeah, the Edsel really wasn't that much worse than the cars of the 50s. It just wore its terribleness on its grill. It was so apparently terrible that, you know, if people actually took the time, they would have looked at whatever else they were driving and realized that it was just as bad. And the Edsel never caught on. I mean, it was a real disaster for Ford. And it's always been kind of shorthand for automotive crumminess since.
The topic this hour, 100 worst cars of all time. 100 worst cars of all time. Think about that. It's an article from InsideLine.com. You can find a link to the article at WPR.org on the Kathleen Dunn page. 800-486-8655 is the phone number. Talk at WPR.org, the email. You can also look at the Kathleen Dunn Facebook page, Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Leave a comment there. Lines are full. We'll get to phone calls in just a moment. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Can't do a show about cars without playing some Gary Newman. Just, I wasn't going to allow that. And Chrissy Pease fortunately agreed with me. We're talking about the 100 worst cars of all time this morning with John Prilly Huffman, freelance automotive writer whose work appears regularly in the New York Times, Car and Driver, Popular Mechanics, and Hot Rod. And in this case, on Inside Line, that's all one word, InsideLine.com. The 100 worst cars of all time. Lots of people on the phone. Chris in Oshkosh, you'll be next. Chris, good morning.
Morning. I had a fleet vehicle for the state that was an 87 Plymouth Grand Fury, and if I was off work, it was in the shop, and we used to kind of joke that they made those with, they put a pile of spare parts in the corner, and when they had enough to build a car, they'd build a fleet car for the state. And unfortunately, the replacement for the M-body Chryslers, which would kill any time you made a U-turn, was the 89 Chevy, which had 5 alternators and 3 transmissions and 85,000 miles, which was then replaced by the possibly most hideous car I've ever seen in my lifetime, the 91 Caprice.
Mm-hmm.
And finally in 92, when they came out with the Crown Vic with the 4.6-liter engine, I had my first good car.
Well, I think that there are a lot of police officers who swear by the old Caprice, the 9C1 Caprice, which is one of the reasons why it didn't make the list, and also it got transformed into the Impala SS in 93. So a lot of people still like those cars, so that's why that one didn't make the list. The old M cars, the Chrysler M cars, were all derivatives of the Plymouth Velari and Dodge Aspen, which came out in 76. And those cars were pretty terrible from the moment they hit the road until they left, and that was until like 1989 or 1990, if I remember. And I don't, so, you know, yeah, a lot of terrible cars being in that time, and you're stuck driving cars you don't own.
Well, the state, we mentioned AMC. This AMC had a big plant in Kenosha, and so in Wisconsin, for a while, there were a lot of Renault Alliances in the state fleet, and I drove a few of those back and forth from Superior to Madison, which is about a 650-mile round trip, and trying to get one of those up to 65 was always a real. You expected to see 4 dents appear in the hood of the car at some point, but I noticed the Renault Alliance on the list, and I was glad to see it there. Quite frankly,
yeah. Well, the Alliance was so bad. I think 3 or 4 years after it was out, you actually saw them just abandoned by the roadside. People just get out of them and leave them there.
Now here's a car that I thought should have been there, but it wasn't. It was the Ford Tempo. I think that thing had
Tempo
about
Tempo was as boring as the Tempo was. It was so simply designed. It was actually pretty rugged for a lot of people, and you can't argue with a car that has almost no moving parts. So
the thing that really bothered me was that the gas tank was so small. You couldn't drive 300 miles on a tank of gas.
Well, you know, my mom had a Tempo. and we never had that. Maybe we just were driving, didn't need the range, weren't as range aware as you were. But the car really worked well for her.
Well, most of my drives are minimum of 300 miles at a shot, so
my mom usually can't get out of the driveway.
Well, my mother is 92 and has never had a driver's license, so she
mom is 78 and now she drives a BMW X5.
Really?
So,
good for you, mom.
Way to go. V8, which just goes to show you what type of mother I grew up, what kind of family I grew up in.
Hey, you know, good for you.
Yeah.
Let's go to Viola and hear what Eugene has to say. Eugene, good morning.
Good morning. I'm wondering, you said the 100 worst cars of all time, if a 1934 Ford with all suicide doors and the distributors down in front made the list. The suicide doors, they made them for 2 years, 33 and 34, and those distributors down in front, they were just a pain. Because every time you hit water and he got them wet, you had to take your distributor caps off and dry your distributor out. In 35, they shortened up the body and put the distributors up on top.
Yeah, but can't we also agree that the 34 Ford is one of the most beautiful cars ever built?
Yep, I had one.
I mean, beauty really lets a lot go. And the 34 Ford with the suicide, especially the suicide doors, the three-window coupe, is one of the classic designs of American cardom. It'd be very hard to argue that that car was any worse than anything else being sold in 34. But very hard to argue that it isn't a classic car.
Eugene, thanks for the call. Let's go next to Steve in Montreal.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, let me throw my two bits here. Let's beat up on Pontiac a little more.
Okay.
I had a 01 Pontiac Aztec. That was a car I was going to drive forever,
uh-huh.
All-wheel drive. I live up here in northern Wisconsin. I took a while to look at it. I liked the style, but I couldn't fix it fast enough. From major engine failure, a transmission that made very suspicious sounds,
uh-huh.
A steering gear that was replaced. The only thing not actually replaced on it or indicated imminent failure was the rear final drive. And
well,
I got rid of it, and I bought a Pontiac Vibe, Toyota Matrix clone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Pontiota.
Yeah, and that thing, I just, let's see, this morning coming back from breakfast, the heater blower switch has had a failure. Vendor-sourced parts are going out rather rapidly. And it's really frustrating.
Well, the Aztec is number one on the list for worst cars of all time.
Oh, I'll agree.
Yeah, okay. And and it was terrible, and it was comprehensively terrible. The Vibe, I don't know what your particular experience is, but generally speaking, a lot of people have been very happy with their Pontiotas.
Well, it runs good. It's my ski cruiser. It's mm-hmm. great in the snow, but $2,000 out of my wallet for wheel bearings, rear hubs, brake components, stuff that Toyota Motor buys, not manufactures. Runs good.
Yeah, I wish I could tell you. Maybe there's a big difference between my experience with Toyota products out here in California than your experiences in the weather of Minnesota. Wisconsin.
Well, this came from Fremont, California. It should have started out good, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that if you put a car in the winter with severe winter weather, it gets beat up a lot. Things like wheel bearings get beat up with salt on the road that we don't get here in California.
Well, let me take this one more point.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a 96 Chevrolet S10
mm-hmm.
and pushing 180,000 miles on it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the only thing that's been replaced on it have been normal wear items.
I got to tell you, the thing that American companies have always built well are pickup trucks. There are no American pickup trucks on our list.
Yeah, that's for sure. My brother-in-law lives up in northern Wisconsin and has had a Pontiac Vibe and swears by it and hasn't had any trouble with it. So his experience isn't quite what Steve's is. But he nailed the Aztec. It's number one on the list.
Yeah.
And we have to our listeners, lines available now. If you've been trying to get in, two lines just opened up at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. We're talking about the 100 worst cars of All Time with John Perley Huffman, freelance automotive writer. This article appears in InsideLine.com, and a link to that can be found on the Kathleen Dunn Show page at WPR.org. Let's look at some of the other cars here. Here was one I wasn't quite familiar with the model. The company I was, the 99 Daewoo Nubra. Oh, Nubra. Nubra. I don't know where that name came from, but this was a Korean car that just bombed.
Yeah, it came and went. I don't think it actually, I think the dealerships were actually restricted to the West Coast, so you may not have actually ever reached Wisconsin. And it was just a hideously boring car, and it came and it went very, very quickly. Daewoo was also the company that built the front-drive Pontiac Le Mans in the late 80s and early 90s, which is a terrible car that that I argued for to put on the list. And Daewoo has basically become a fully owned subsidiary of General Motors, and now sells cars branded as Chevrolets.
We mentioned Pontiac. We keep beating up on them, but one of the cars that was on the list that kind of surprised me was the 05 Grand Prix GXP. Why didn't you like that?
Well, this is the car I argued against. I wanted the car left off the list, so I'll have to explain why it's on there. The car had a V8 engine, the GXP, the 05, they put a V8 engine in it, which is a big, heavy engine in a car that wasn't engineered for that engine. And they ended up putting tires on the front that were wider than tires on the rear in order to try and balance the car out. Never really worked. It never had any ability to, had kind of terrible directional stability, never really cornered well, and it looked dorky.
Yeah, I have to say, it was really sad to watch Pontiac kind of spiral down the drain in the 2000s, because that was a legendary automobile line as far as I was concerned. I had a 1990 Pontiac Grand Prix Turbo, which was
one of the McLaren cars.
I don't know. I bought it at an auction.
Okay.
I don't know. And so it already had quite a few miles on it when I got it. But the 2 years that I had it, it was one of the most fun cars I ever owned. Except that you watch the turbo meter go up and the gas gauge go down, kind of, just sort of reflected.
When you go back
another.
And you look at some of the great Pontiacs of the past, I mean, the 65 and 66 GTOs are just drop-dead gorgeous cars. The Trans Ams from the early to mid-70s are just glorious vehicles. Even and they a car so wickedly nice-looking that it could get away with a giant chicken on its hood.
Yeah.
It could not that many cars are so good looking they could pull that off.
Well, even the Pontiac Bonnevilles in the 90s, and the way the cockpits were set up and the instrumentation and the detailing on the interiors, I mean, it was fantastic.
Yeah, I remember the Bonneville SSEIs had more switches in them than any other car I've ever seen. In the interior, but I always go back to my favorite Pontiac of all time, which is the 1965 Catalina 2+2, which had 8 lug hubs on the wheels and a giant 421 cubic inch engine in the front, and you could play. I think the rear deck lid played as a par 5 according to the PGA. It was just a beautiful car.
Yeah,
and
Catalina.
That's the thing that's sad about Pontiac is it's not the. It's that these terrible cars killed the brand that had so many great cars.
Okay, well, let's jump on AMC again here. Julia from Madison writes, in the early 1980s, we had an AMC Gremlin, and it was terrible. It hurt your back. Everything went wrong with it, and it was just a horrible, horrible, horrible. That's three horribles car. Well, the Gremlin is on the list.
Yeah, the Gremlin's on the list. In fact, I just wrote if you go back a couple of weeks on the New York Times website, you can read a story I wrote about the genesis of the Gremlin and the Chevrolet Vega and the Ford Pinto, the three little pigs of the 1970s small cars. That the Gremlin was built basically as a rush job to get into the market as quickly as possible. So they knocked 12 inches out of the wheelbase of the AMC Hornet Compact and literally sliced off the back so there was no rear overhang, and called that a compact car, a subcompact car. It was terribly nose heavy, handled badly, had ancient mechanicals, just terrible car. Here I am talking to Wisconsin, and I feel like we're picking on Kenosha.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was a lot to. There's a lot of grist for that mill. The Chevy Vega is on your list. The very first version, though, Was there any love for? I actually owned two different Vegas and a Monza, so I hit several vehicles on your list.
Well, my first car was a Vega, and it was terrible. It was rotting. My grandfather had owned it, and when he passed, the car got passed down to me, and it was only 4 or 5 years old when I got it, and it was already rotted through and many of the body panels. And that's, I live in Santa Barbara, California, where we have no body rot. And I remember it had aluminum engine, aluminum block engine with an iron cylinder head. They would heat up at different temperatures, and that would end up with water jacket passing into the cylinders, and that would score the cylinder walls. And everybody knew that they burned oil like mad. My personal relation with the Vega is that the boss that held on the starter motor cracked off the block, which made it impossible to fix the starter motor without changing the block in the engine, which brought the car's value down to essentially zero. And yeah. That was the car I argued for number one. The Vega did more to destroy General Motors in so many ways than any other car.
What about the Monza?
The Monza's a Vega with a different body. It was built in the same plant, used the same structure as the Vega, and just added a slicker-looking body. One of the things is that there was a V8-powered Monza, and in order to change the rear spark plugs in the V8-powered Monza, you had to loosen the motor mounts and lift the engine up out of the engine bay to actually reach the rearmost spark plugs.
Wow!
Really bad. Had everything that was bad about the Vega, plus terrible engineering of the V8 engine.
I owned one of those, but not long enough to have to replace the spark plugs, thank goodness. Let's hear from Jeff in La Crosse next. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, on the opposite end of the scale, I drove a Ford Fiesta, a 76 Ford Fiesta. I just retired it about 3 years ago, and it was still running when I retired it.
Mm-hmm. I like the Fiesta. That's the European-built Fiesta.
Yeah, I was from some people from Czechoslovakia were real familiar with them.
Yeah, no, they were built in, I think they were built in Dagenheim, Germany. And that was the original Fiesta. It was a really sweet, neat looking little car.
Yeah, pretty bare bones. Right,
yeah, 12 inch wheels,
a nice
not a big car.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember when those came out, too, and that was also another car that's actually on the list that came out about the same time was the 1976 Chevette, or the Chevette, as were also known. They were famous for having the carburetor come loose from the top of the intake manifold.
Well, why should the carburetor be different than any other part on the car?
Hey, I that's another car I owned that's on the list. Man, I looked through this, and it was kind of like old home week for me because I owned a number of these things.
I feel pity for you in your automotive life.
Well, I have to say that on glare ice, that Chevette was a great handling vehicle. And see, in California, you didn't have to deal with that. But I drove that through an ice storm 60 miles one time in order to spend Christmas with my family. So I had a few good memories about it. Here's an email from Trish and Nina, who writes, "I was about to turn off the radio, boy, I hate to hear that, to head to work when I heard a caller mention the Dodge Spirit. Back in the 90s, we ended up with a silver Dodge Spirit as a rental car on Maui. It earned several nicknames, the most memorable of which were Spiritus Sanctus and the Screamin' Hunk of Burnin' Funk. When it was loaded with full-grown humans, it could barely reach 40 miles per hour and would emit this Tim Conway-esque harumph when you put the pedal to the metal to attempt highway velocity. We laughed to the point of tears every time we rode in that car. When my sister arrived, she spoiled all the fun by insisting on exchanging it for a convertible. Thanks for bringing up such good memories." Well, thanks for the email, Trish.
Well, it's amazing how sometimes just the experience of a bad car can be some of the best times you have with people.
Well, no kidding. I owned a 1980 Chevette that had air conditioning. And when the AC compressor would go on, you'd lose 5 miles an hour. You'd be driving down the road, and the AC compressor would come on, and you'd immediately go down 5 miles an hour. Or at night, your lights would dim. It was really weird.
Had the more powerful engine, because I understand you lost 7 miles per hour if you got the small engine.
Well, yeah, okay. Let's see. Fred in Adams County. Go ahead.
Yeah, real quick on this beautiful cold December day. Real quick on the Vega. They back then, the GM management said, if you want a cheap car, like that tough little Subaru, they were coming out of Japan, you want a Jeep car, we'll build one, $1,750. My friend had one. They were junk. They were garbage. But what I want you to talk about is a minute when General Motors put diesel engines, these V8s, and they were at Cadillacs. My friend, another friend had one of those a bit, but they talk about GMs putting the diesels in the cars, and I'll stand by and listen.
We decided not to mention every diesel that General Motors made in the 1970s and 80s because we could have filled up about 30 slots with that. Because they put diesels in the Cadillac Seville, they put it in the big Cadillacs, they put diesels in lots of Oldsmobiles, they even put diesels in the pickups. I'm sorry, I forgot that we did have the one pickup truck that is in there is the diesel-powered 1980 Chevrolet pickup. Because the engine was a converted gasoline engine, converted to diesel operation. And they were just terrible. They broke, they fell apart, and oftentimes people found themselves inside the dealerships demanding that the diesel engine be picked out and the gasoline engine be installed. They were just one of the most half-engineered cars and half-engineered engines ever put out by General Motors. And General Motors put out a lot of garbage.
Don't you wonder sometimes if some of these huge mistakes that we've seen in automotive design were because somebody from upper management came in and said, this is what you're going to do, now just make it happen, and you've got 20 days to put it together?
Well, I'll give you an idea of exactly what you're talking about. The Aztec was originally a concept car based on a unique platform. That is, the underpinnings of the car were unique to the vehicle. And then what happened was management came in and said, well, we want to make the Aztec, but you have to base it on the existing minivan architecture. And that's when all the proportions went astray. And that's when it picked up all the bad things that were happening with the minivan. And that was a management decision. And management looked at that vehicle when I know engineers who were working at GM at the time who were crying out that you can't put this into production because it's too ugly and it's ill-engineered, and management signed off on it anyhow. And it was all upper management that put that car out.
Well, it's always easiest to blame upper management because it really is usually their fault.
Sometimes it is. I mean, upper management, sooner or later, is supposed to be taking responsibility in exchange for large paychecks.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and get through as many emails and phone calls as we can. The screen is just lit up like a Christmas tree here. If you've been trying to get in and can't, send us an email. We'll try to get to all of them before the end of the hour. Talk@WPR.org is the email address. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. It's the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Well, I figured it up in over a period of time. This $4,000 car of mine cost $14,000.99. Well, now, Lord, Mr. Ford, I just wish that you could see what your simple horseless carriage has become. Well, it seems your contribution to man, to say the least, got a little out of hand. Well,
thank you, Jerry Reed, for that great song, Lord, Mr. Ford, What Have You Done? We're talking about the 100 worst cars of all time. What a fun list this is. If you want to see it, go to WPR.org, the Kathleen Dunn Show page, and there's a direct link to InsideLine.com where this article appears. John Perley Huffman, who wrote the article with a lot of help, is a freelance automotive writer whose work appears regularly in the New York Times, Car and Driver, Popular Mechanics, and Hot Rod. And he's with me on the phone, and a whole bunch of other people are. Let's try and get through some of these emails because some of them are really cute. Here's one who says, Dan in Elkhorn writes, can you or have you mentioned the Yugo? Like, sometimes you go, sometimes you don't. The Yugo.
Yeah, I think the Yugo came in at number 4 on our list. Which is that it was, as we said, it was couldn't possibly be as awful as its low price suggested, but it was. It was that awful.
Yeah, that was, yeah. Let's see. Here's another one. Click and Clack said the reason no AMC Concorde, a notoriously bad car, owners ever called in to Car Talk about a problem was because they were always out under their cars trying to fix them. Karen in Eau Claire, who says, she's a former 72 Dodge Dart owner for 18 years.
Mm. The Concorde was actually an updated version of the Hornet.
Right.
So, you know, you could, if you want, you could say it was in production for almost 20 years, and it was pretty terrible throughout that. And the Concorde is, you know, at some point in time we had to lay off on the AMCs because there were other terrible cars to talk about.
Yeah. Well, there's a Cadillac on the list. In fact, I think there are a couple of them. And that, you know, you think, well, Cadillac, that's supposed to really be, you know, top of the line. What was wrong?
Well, you know, sometimes these cars make it to a list only because they betray something about what a Cadillac should be. And you take something like the Cadillac Cimarron, which came out in 1982, which was basically a Chevy Cavalier with leather upholstery.
Yeah, I thought that was really weird.
Very weird and very stupid, and they sold it as an alternative to a BMW, the BMW 3 Series. Mm. And it was a ridiculous betrayal of everything a Cadillac should be. Was it any worse than a Cavalier? No, it was no worse than a Cavalier, but it was a lot more expensive, and it was a terrible Cadillac.
But they were built in Wisconsin.
No, I think actually they were built in Ohio. They were built on the Lordstown line in Ohio, which builds all of General Motors small cars.
Okay, there was a smaller Cadillac that was built in Janesville for a while, and I forget which one it was.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't do plants off the top of my list. I know that Janesville was the SUV capital of the planet for a long time.
Yeah, it was, but they did. Yeah. I think they did build one of the. There were a number. Cadillac had a number of attempts to build a smaller version. And I always wondered why.
Well, you know, because that's the entry level of the market changed. I mean, really, BMW, we tend to forget that BMW radically changed the luxury car market with the 3 Series, the small BMW, which put everybody on the path towards luxury car ownership, would start in the 3 Series, move to a 5 Series, end up in a 7 Series. And Cadillac wanted to be on that same stepping stone for people so that they could get into the brand cheaper by having a smaller car. And, you know, right now they've done a pretty good job. The CTS that they're selling right now is actually a pretty decent car, very nice car.
About the size of a Toyota Camry.
It's about the size of a Toyota Camry, but it's got a style on its own. It uses a very nice high-tech V6 as its standard power plant, and and you can get it with a supercharged V8 in the CTS V version that just turns it into a rocket ship, which is not, you know, which is, it actually made something new for Cadillac. There's nothing the matter with the idea of a smaller Cadillac. It's the problem with the execution of the smaller Cadillacs have been.
Let's go to Rick in Green Bay next. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show. Two points. One is what stinks is that Pontiac made all those bad cars, and right before they went out of market, they came up with that G8, which turned out to be a really great car.
Yeah.
Nice four-door sedan, V8 powered. But the car that I don't care for, and I don't know about the quality of it, is the Toyota Prius. Not because of the car, but because of the way it makes people drive. You tend to get behind those people on the highway going 55 instead of 65, and it drives me absolutely crazy.
Well, it drives me crazy because I'm a Prius hater of long standing, and I will argue till my face is blue to people not to buy it, and they go out and they buy it anyhow because it just comes across as so virtuous.
Absolutely.
But I agree with you. I agree with you. The G8. The G8 was a wonderful car, and it was basically a BMW clone in the way it was engineered and the way it was built. And it was really sad that probably the very best Pontiac ever built, as far as a driving car, the G8 was the last Pontiac ever built.
Absolutely. Hey, great show,
Rick,
guys. Take care.
Thanks for the call. Mary in Milwaukee, you're next. Go ahead, Mary. Go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello.
What a great hello.
This is an interesting show. I would like to nominate the Plymouth Horizon.
Yeah, you know, the Plymouth Horizon and Dodge Omni were the same car. They were kind of lousy and terrible, but I just know too many of them that just kept on working for so long.
Okay, then we must have had bummers. We, in between my husband and myself and my family, we had three. You could rely on them to have their locks freeze up all winter. You had to crawl in through the back hatch if you wanted to get in your car, because at least that lock sometimes worked. It wouldn't ice up. We've had them self-destruct. We had fuel sensor issues. They would cut out on the freeway.
Mm-hmm.
One of my daughters had her car burst into flames on the New Jersey Turnpike in the middle of the night as she was driving home. Another
Holy
one
smokes.
Self-destructed. My son was made a U-turn and the frame broke.
Well, trust me, it was a car that was discussed amongst the various editors, and I can't recall exactly why it didn't end up on the list, but it, okay. But it was fought over and struggled over, and there was a lot of people who really hated it.
Okay.
Mary,
you haven't made
Mary
it,
thanks.
Then.
Thanks for the call. Okay. Let's go up to Green Bay next and hear from Ken. Ken, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for your radio show. It's been great. I would like to hear your take on the closing of the Saturn dealers and the Saturn factories, and if there's any truth to the rumors that Saturn was cannibalizing, you know, some of Chevrolet's sales and Buick sales, and that may have been the reason partly for its closing.
There's a large corporate intrigue story behind the way Saturn was administered and run. They could fill a book.
Yeah,
almost instantly an orphan within General Motors.
There is a Saturn on your list.
Yeah, there is one Saturn on our list, which is the Saturn Ion, which was the last of the plastic-bodied Saturns built, which was just hideous. And you know, the problem with Saturn was they were never able to. They would attract customers with their first cars, and they're never able to follow up with a second car for them to move into. Mm-hmm. They never had any Saturn to move into from a customer standpoint. Mm-hmm. And by the time General Motors finally started investing in Saturn, which is towards the beginning of this century, they were out of time, and they were out of money, and that's when General Motors went bankrupt.
A couple of emails from people who wanted to nominate the Opel Kadett.
Yeah, that was a car that's kind of legendary at Car and Driver. The Kadett was so bad that they photographed it inside a junkyard in 1968. Losing all of the General Motors advertising for a time, as the legend goes. It was a really, truly terrible car. The Kadett, though, I think was a little bit obscure for the list because they didn't sell very many of them.
Let's go to Bill in Madison next. Bill, good morning. Thanks for joining
us.
Yeah,
I was in Europe for a while, and I drove a Mercedes diesel, and when I came back to the States, I bought a Cadillac with that diesel motor. It was a good motor. It only went 80,000 miles. The reason why is because, for some reason or other, they didn't make the head bolts, strong enough to bring enough pressure to keep that gasket tight so it would start leaking. But the first car I ever had was a 38 Buick Century with side mounts. So we went from Duluth down to the state basketball tournaments, and down there, snow started coming, so I had side mounts. I took the winter tires off the side mounts, put them on the rear, and threw 6 inches of snow, four guys in the back, three in the front. We made it back to Duluth. Without those side mounts, I wouldn't have had winter tires, and we wouldn't have made it back to Duluth that night.
Yeah, boy, the 38 Century was a great-looking car, too, wasn't it?
Better believe it.
Yeah, that's a wonderful looking car. I can't say I've ever driven a 38 Century, though. I mean, if somebody ever wants to give me a chance to, I'd love to.
My late father-in-law had an expression, 3 pounds lighter than a Buick.
The Buicks were not small cars.
Okay, let's see. We've got a fan of the Aztec, I think, Kim up in northern Wisconsin. Kim, good morning.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have an 01 Aztec. I have 105,000 miles on it. I've had nothing major wrong with it so far, knock on wood. Mm-hmm. And I'm in and out listening to your program, and the biggest thing I'm hearing is that it's ugly. Can you tell me what has been the problems with it mechanically?
Well, mechanically, the Aztec is a descendant of the GM minivan platform, which is a descendant of the GM X car platform. It's been fragile for a lot of people. I'm glad your experience has not been that. I mean, there are Honda Accords that have been terrible, and there have been people who've driven Aztecs that have gone 200,000 miles. You can't say any one thing is going to happen for any particular example of the breed. But the transmissions were notoriously fragile in the Aztec. The engines were a little bit fragile. There are parts of the suspension that tend to rattle off the car. But, you know, it's not necessarily true for every example.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kim, I'm glad you've had good luck with your Aztec. And, a lot of fun with lists like this is talking about the various kinds of cars and arguing over which one should be on it and which one shouldn't. I suppose when you start with a limit of we're only going to have 100 cars on the list, that means that you're going to have people saying, well, there was, you know, that this car should have been on or that car should have been on, but you only have 100 slots.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is that, you know, just because a car is on the list doesn't mean that there isn't somebody out there who didn't have a great experience with the car.
Yeah, I had two Vegas, and I actually had, I ran one until the head warped, but I actually didn't have that bad an experience with it, but, you know, that was just me.
Yeah, well, I had a terrible experience with mine, so.
Well, there you go. See, it all balances out. We're just about out of time. Was there a car we didn't get to that you really wanted to mention? Got about 30 seconds.
You know, when you get right down to the top of the list, I think one of the cars that people don't mention is the 1974 Mustang II, Ford Mustang II, which is a car that just betrayed everything that a Mustang was supposed to be about, and a car that disappointed me in so many ways because I'm a big Mustang fan.
Okay. Well,
and I don't know if anybody else shares the disappointment with that car that I do, but boy, that one makes me sad every time I look at it.
Okay, and we'll leave it there. Thank you so much for being on the program this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Very nice talking with you all.
John Perley Huffman, freelance automotive writer, whose work appears regularly in the New York Times, Car and Driver, and Popular Mechanics, and Hot Rod, 100 Worst Cars of All Time, on InsideLine.com. Chrissy Pease put together the program today. Katie Matson handled on-air production. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network.